Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome back! My name is Kit.
I'm Steve.
And
wow.
This is Streaming Things. This time, it's the patron pick, baby. We're talking about Scott Pilgrim versus the World from 2010, directed by Edgar Wright, based on the popular comic books.
Yeah.
I didn't know if they pretentiously called them graphic novels or if I was okay to just say comic books.
I think you can say comic books. We're all adults here. Come on. We all know what we're talking about.
We all know what that means.
Yeah.
And we're delighted to discuss this film. Longtime favorite of both of ours is my understanding. Of course, we'll talk about our overall thoughts, our history with this film and what it was like revisiting it this time. And then we'll go through a scene by scene, play by play reaction and recap right afterward. You can follow the show, support it rather, at patreon.com/streamingthings. And at a certain tier, you can make us watch movies just like this one. And that's a cool thing, a cool benefit. But even in lower tiers, you get other benefits like the ability to vote on monthly Patreon polls. Like this month's holiday poll, the victory is likely going to go to Gremlins, which actually I was surprised by. I'll say it.
Were you really?
I haven't said that before. When you sent me your nominations, I said, oh, you're playing dirty. Because anytime you pick like elder millennial Gen X movies, it's a lock with our audience. And I feel like that's a dirty down dirty move, right? But that's also your favorite era as well. Like you're kind of an 80s guy. So it's like you're just being true to yourself.
I literally look up like Christmas movies and like
and you happen to align with the listeners. That's all.
I can't nominate the K-Stew holiday movie again like last year. So I can't nominate Happiest Season again.
I wish you would.
I guess I could, but
I was going to nominate Eyes Wide Shut, but I just knew it wouldn't work.
No, you said Eyes Wide Shut. I think I did that last year. I laughed, but I was like, there's no way that would win.
Yeah. It's a Christmas movie.
I mean, yeah.
One with a bunch of fucking.
Same as Die Hard. It's also
less fucking,
movie. Less fucking, but
it won last year. Die Hard did. Mm-hmm. It should have leaned into the Christmas nature of it and just called it Fuck Hard.
Fuck Hard.
Not Die Hard. I
Welcome
mean,
Eyes to Wide the party, Shut. Pal.
Argyle's out in the limo jerking off.
Hell yeah.
Anywho,
Big Bear.
We just remade a porn
a
parody.
Christmas classic.
A porn parody of the Christmas classic.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just thought Gremlins is popular, but it's no Gremlins 2. Gremlins 2, as many know, is the one. That's the one you want.
The superior Gremlins.
Yeah, that's right. It's kind of like Evil Dead 2, where it like he realized what it was more and just leaned into it.
Yeah.
So I thought,
will
maybe,
I nominate Gremlins 2 next month in January? Who's to say?
Yeah. So I expected a Scrooged victory, if I'm honest, which I think is not even second place. Or
what was your other one? Cause you picked,
I picked Klaus.
Klaus. That's right.
And, I don't even remember what, to be honest with you, something else. Fire.
Some other fire movie. My boy came in as Klaus.
Violent Night pulled the pulled the fans from Stranger Things in, the David Harbour fans. I love Violent Night. It's great. But, you know, Klaus is an unexpected recent classic, I would call it, for Christmas. But anyway, I'm happy to watch Gremlins. It looks like that's going to be the victor. So you can join things like that at patreon.com/streamingthings, the Discord membership, all that stuff. If you can't financially support the show, more than understandable, especially during the holiday season. But times are tight in general for everybody right now.
So tight.
People message us all the time and say, hey, I have to pause my patronage temporarily. I'm just really struggling financially right now. You don't have to message me that.
We get it. We're just the fact that you would even consider giving us money for the show is a huge honor. And we thank you eternally for that.
We get notified when people cancel their memberships, but zero times have we ever judged anybody for that.
No judgments.
Completely understandable. The more money that we're able to make with this show, the more time and energy we're able to devote to it. And we're excited for the future when one day episodes every day, baby, just all the different, we have so many things we want to cover.
Yeah.
That we just can't devote. We have to pick and choose. And it pains us.
We are just two mortal men.
That's right.
And sometimes Madison is here as well.
Yes. And a mortal woman.
And a mortal woman.
Who's as strong as two mortal men, but still mortal.
Stronger.
I just wanted to shout that out because I've gotten a few of those messages in the past few months. And you don't have to apologize for that. We're just so happy you ever thought to pay actual monies to us at all. And we appreciate you so much, even just for listening to the show, rating the, sharing it with friends or sharing it on social media, giving it a 5 stars and a review on iTunes, stuff like that is so helpful. We appreciate you. I hope you're having a wonderful, relatively stress-free holiday season. Mm-hmm. And hopefully Gremlins will help with that. Next week, we're going to be talking about Lost episode 12, but also a very special holiday episode where we're going to be doing kind of a Streaming Things greatest hits. We've had a lot of the patrons pick out their favorite moments from this year's episodes. Is that correct?
Yes.
And you're going to be probably clipping them. And
I think it's this year and a little bit of change because I think some of the things people suggested were things like Andy's infamous Polyjuice Potion moment.
Was that not this year?
I think that was technically last November, but we're going to count it.
Yeah.
Because that's a great, that's
it's
a
within
great
12 battle. Months from when you initially asked.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, that is true. It is.
Fuck
yeah.
It.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
So stuff like that. So look forward to that. That'll be a hoot and a holler, a blast. What else we got? We got any other business news or anything? You can email the show, streamingthingspod@gmail.com.
Yeah. Buy some merch.
Go to streamingthingspod.com. There's links to our merch store. West River Printing is phenomenal. If you need some merch, merchandise made for any reason.
Merchandise.
Yeah. Go to them. And let's get to our review of Scott Pilgrim versus the World. Steve, what's your history with this film and what was it like watching it now?
Okay, so I have a very long, storied and intimate history.
A checkered past.
Several evil exes worth of a past,
ooh,
one might say, with this movie. Let me just say.
We've got Australian for
right
a second.
Right out of the gate. Let me just tell you. Scott Pilgrim versus the World is one of my favorite movies of all time. Definitely in the top 10, maybe the top 5. I adore this movie to death. The first time I saw this movie, I remember it like it was yesterday. It was the year 2010. I was in Orlando, Florida for a Star Wars convention. I was there with, been on the show many a times. Phil was there. Our buddy John was there and our friend Josh was there. And John specifically, I remember my buddy John, he was very, very excited about this movie. And I think we all were, but he specifically was incredibly excited. And so we found a movie. We had spent the whole day at the Star Wars convention. And then we found a movie theater, went to that theater and saw Scott Pilgrim that Friday night, the opening of it, at least for that theater. And what a time. It was like this really
cool. What a time to be alive.
What a time to be alive. It was this really cool theater that was kind of ornate. I remember there was like a weird, they had like some cloud decorations in the ceiling. Wow. So it was if you were like, I don't know, under a night sky, which was a little, I mean, come on.
Like Pagemaster style?
Kinda.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, 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 kinda.
Wow. That's a movie I haven't thought about in decades.
Decades, yeah, the Pagemaster. And one of my favorite, I've told the story on the podcast before, but it originates from this viewing was the showing of the trailer for Devil. Do you remember the movie Devil by M. Night Shyamalan?
No, I never watched it.
I've never seen it either, but I will never forget seeing the trailer that played before Scott Pilgrim, because the movie's running. And if you don't know, it's like a story about several strangers trapped on an elevator, one of which may be the devil. Mm. And so like the trailer's playing, you could tell the crowd's kind of like into it. Like,
foosball's the devil. I know that.
Yeah, foosball is the devil. Where is he? As soon as the foosball pops up, I'll know who the devil is. Mm-hmm. So everyone in the crowd super into it. And then the title card, from the mind of M. Night Shyamalan, and the whole theater went, ugh.
Already? In 2010?
Yeah.
And it already turned on him?
Honestly, one of the funniest things ever, because I didn't see that coming, but literally the whole theater collectively, like 10 or 12 people.
Oh, this is probably like peak M. Night hatred, actually.
Yeah, because it was like right
10 years after The Sixth Sense, so.
Yeah, and then around the time that The Last Airbender was coming out, stuff like that. So yeah, like it was just one of the funniest experiences. But long story short, we saw Scott Pilgrim versus the World. I instantly fell in love with this movie because this movie has it all, man. It's directed by Edgar Wright, one of the streaming thing's darlings, I would say, when it comes to directors.
Yeah.
It's got just a amazing jaw-dropping cast. And a lot of these people are like some of them were like starting to get popular in their career, but it's before they become like the mega stars they are today.
Yeah.
I think, like, you know, back then Michael Cera was the biggest name in this whole
movie. Yeah, this is 4 years after Superbad, or three years after Superbad. But other than that, everybody else is pre Parks and Rec. This is pre Captain America. So I think, right?
Yeah, this is definitely pre Captain America for sure. But I mean, like, it's so funny to watch this movie now, and like Michael Cera was the biggest star when this came out, and several of his contemporaries in this movie have like eclipsed him in terms of like what they've gone on to do star power wise.
Yes.
But everyone's so amazing. And this movie is bold in its art direction, its music, its characterization, its the sense of style, the directing. And there's all these bold choices that somehow come together and work so well. And this movie has a kineticism to it. It has a pace to it. It's funny, but also it's not shy about having a protagonist that kind of sucks.
Super sucks.
Super sucks, especially in the beginning. And I kind of like that about it I'm going long on why I like this movie so much, but
I love it.
As I was watching it last night, I actually watched it maybe 3 months ago because I showed Erica. She wanted to see what some of my favorite movies were, and I popped that on 3 months ago. But I'm watching it last night and I had a realization that I've never had before, because this movie is 13 years old now, came out in 2010. Mm-hmm. As I was watching it, I was like, wow, I've never had a movie make me feel this way before. This is a movie that's making me feel young. Nice. It's making me feel young again, because the music's playing and it's just bringing me back to that time period when I was young. Because when in 2010, I was 22. I'm Scott Pilgrim's age, or the age that character is supposed to be in the movie. And so I was in the perfect time period of ingesting this franchise, ingesting this movie. So yeah, like even the seedier things, the things that haven't aged well in this movie, because there are several.
Yes.
Even those things bring me back to that time. It's like, I remember when people thought it was okay to say that. I remember when I was younger and some of the things you did were selfish and not super cool, but you learned from your mistakes, right? And that's why this movie kind of brings me back to that time. And I love it so much, because it just makes me feel like how I did when I was a young teenager, early 20-year-old. And it's just super cool and fun.
I agree.
Yeah.
I kind of missed the boat on this movie.
Yeah.
2010 was not a year. I've talked about it way too many times. But for new listeners, history of drug addiction, blah, 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 homeless, blah, blah, blah. And 2010 was like the peak of that. You know, I got sober in 2012. So I didn't even watch this movie until 2013 or so. And I didn't know what to make of it, because I think it's ahead of its time, you know?
Yeah.
And I also missed the boat on all of Edgar Wright, pretty much. I'm ashamed to admit this, because Shaun of the Dead is now one of my top 10 favorite movies of all time.
Incredible movie.
I think it's a perfect film, a ridiculously tight script, so clever, so funny. Packed full of references and homages, but also references to itself. And it's so good. It's so layered. And I adore Edgar Wright. But when I watched Shaun of the Dead in high school, I was kind of an edgy teen. You know, I wanted a serious zombie movie. I didn't know. And everybody cool loved it. You know, they were going, you know, Halloween costumes, all that stuff with Shaun of the Dead, all my got cool friends got red on you. Yeah. I just didn't get it. I didn't hate it, but I was like, oh, that was fun. It thought nothing of it. You know what I mean? Didn't even watch Hot Fuzz, I don't think, in high school.
Mm, the tightest of scripts.
Great, great, great movie. And didn't like World's End at all. So it was anyway. And so didn't think much of it. And it was only to like 2013 through 2016 where I not only began to appreciate these movies, but became obsessed with them, including Scott Pilgrim, but much more so Hot Fuzz and Shaun of the Dead. I've told you guys many times that I discovered as a bad parent that little kids will watch Edgar Wright movies because of his style, his quick, crazy, quick frenetic editing style, mm-hmm. which is weird. I've looked it up. He uses different editors for a lot of those. So it really has to just be Edgar is the only like constant in those. And because of that, kids will not look away. Like they're easy. They're really hard to find something they'll pay attention to as far as a feature film. They love Edgar Wright. So I had my son Mason watching Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz because he liked police and he liked zombies. And I was like, boy, do I got a fucking treat for you. And it's something that I can stand to watch twice a day as well. So I've seen Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz dozens and dozens of times. And they never gets old. It truly doesn't ever get
those
old.
Those are great movies.
Watching Scott Pilgrim last night, I liked it a little less than usual while still loving it. Like I gave it, it's an 8 out of 10 to me right now, but it was 5 stars for the last decade or whatever. You know what I mean? But like the societal context and how people have kind of weaponized the character of Scott Pilgrim and really failed to understand that he's not a good person. It's not the movie's fault at all, but it does recolor in the same way that it does for like Fight Club, where like there's a huge mass of people that just really don't understand the satire.
Yeah.
And they like, I am Tyler. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
No,
like, that's not a good, that's not
no,
what
you're not. No,
don't do that.
And so it can't help but kind of recontextualize the movie for me. And like, I can't just like love Fight Club as much as I really do because so many douches do, you know what I mean? And it just kind of, that I felt that way watching Scott Pilgrim last night where it's like as a 35-year-old who once was a very, very selfish and cruel 22-year-old, and not that every 22-year-old is, but I definitely was. Mm-hmm. I probably was. Maybe I liked it more than I'm willing to admit. I just didn't like that about myself. I don't know, but I just didn't have the same experience I normally do. And it's so damn silly, you know? Yeah, but I do want to say this music is my jam.
Yes.
I grew up on crunchy alt rock. That's why you guys make fun of me because I don't know the Cyndi Lauper song and I don't know the Duran Duran song. I was too busy listening to Weezer and Stone Temple Pilots and Nirvana and Pearl Jam and just relentlessly obsessed with stuff like that. The Black Keys, Cage the Elephant, like even those neo alt rock resurgences, those are my favorite. Mm-hmm. And so when they play this funny quote unquote music, I'm the garbage man. I actually unironically fucking love that song.
Amazing music because it's Beck. Like this is all Beck created. Like all of the Sex Bomb songs are created by Beck. So like, and like you can listen to the Beck's versions of him singing, I'll be your garbage man. You can hear his version of that song. And then, you know, around this time.
And Edgar Wright is a famous music connoisseur, which just makes this a new level of fun for me.
And also, I mean, I don't want us to go too far without mentioning that Scott Pilgrim versus the World, the movie, is based off a series of comic books by Brian Lee O'Malley. Mm-hmm. He wrote.
And you read those as well.
I read those when I was younger. Yeah. So I watched the movie first, went back and read the books, but there are 6 or 7 of them. The title Scott Pilgrim versus the World is the title of the second book.
Oh, okay.
They go Scott Pilgrim's Precious Little Life, Scott Pilgrim versus the World, Scott Pilgrim and the Infinite Sadness, which is an obvious Smashing Pumpkins reference.
Yeah.
Actually, I think at one point Scott's wearing a shirt that has S&P on it. A lot of people think it's just Scott Pilgrim, but it's actually a Smashing Pumpkins shirt. the fourth book is Scott Pilgrim Gets It Together, Scott Pilgrim versus the Universe, and then the last book is Scott Pilgrim's Finest Hour. And the interesting thing about this, a lot of the songs, the band t-shirts, well,
Infinite
the references,
Sadness is one of the chapter names in the movie too. Did you catch that?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. There's a ton of like Easter eggs and references to things that are in the books that are expanded upon in the books, but they don't necessarily have the time to do it in this movie.
Yeah.
The books in the movie are actually pretty similar up until you get to the fourth book. And then they kind of truncate a bunch of plot points, like the Katayanagi twins and Roxanne. Mm-hmm. A lot of their storylines are really kind of compacted and together. Kim is actually one of my favorite characters in the book. She's such a good character, but a lot of her storyline is kind of taken out of the movie, unfortunately. Yeah.
And it results in her just being this girl who's upset that Scott dumped her. And like, there's a lot of not misogyny, but like borderline, you know, actual as well. But like, there's a lot of borderline stuff too, where it's just everybody in relation to Scott. So even though the movie tries to criticize Scott by the end, I don't think people can be blamed too heavily, because it doesn't criticize him very openly. And there's just such a hand wavy. He even says, like, so are we cool now? After he very lackadaisically apologizes for cheating on Knives and Ramona, right? So it's this hand-wavy, like, so we're cool now? And the movie does that, you know? And so I think you can be forgiven for kind of thinking, it kind of sucks that they don't really make him reckon with that.
Yeah, and that's the biggest difference, I think, between the books and the movie is actually, so when the movie was being made, the last book was being written, like wasn't finished yet. Mm-hmm. The book came out after the movie did. And there actually is this weird thing where the movie kind of influences the book in some certain scenes. But the biggest difference is, whereas like in the movie, you know, Scott earned the power of love.
Yeah.
Scott earned the power of self-respect. The books actually go much more into, no, Scott has to live with the mistakes he's made. Like they're actually like the Nega Scott confrontation is a much bigger deal, because it's like, oh no, you can't just like, hey, we're cool now. You have to like, reconcile, like you did something, you made a mistake, you have to earn these people's respect back,
right? There's got to be a penance, a real amends made that the movie doesn't allow.
Yeah. And there's also, you know, funny enough, the movie actually, the way the movie ends, there's actually two different endings shot, because they didn't know how Brian Lee O'Malley was going to end the books,
right?
So they shot two different endings, you know, wondering which way he was going to go. Which we'll get into that when we go through the scene breakdown. But it is very interesting. If you do like this movie, and then I agree with you, there is, I think the ending of the movie, the last act, is like the weakest part of the movie for me.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't wrap up these loose ends as well as it should. But if you like the premise of the book, you like the style, you like the jokes of it, I highly encourage you to not only go and read the book so you can get a better version of the story, in my opinion, it's a much more, you know, modern take on the story, even though the books are just as old as the movie.
Yeah.
But also, you know, go watch Scott Pilgrim Takes Off on Netflix, because it's also a really great expansion of this.
I don't even want to breeze past that. And fast forward like a minute if you don't know anything about the show, because I do think it's a wonderful surprise. But Scott Pilgrim Takes Off is an adaptation on Netflix that we all thought was going to be a beat for beat remake in cartoon form.
Because they got the same cast and everything.
The entire cast is back, down to the Kieran Culkin, like everybody, Chris Evans, Aubrey Plaza, Brie Larson,
Chris Evans.
And the entire first episode is a beat for beat remake. And then it has a huge change in plot. And then from then on, you take over from Ramona's perspective, but it's not just like a gender swap version. Like I can just hear the groan of people, huge of South Park fans out there going, so it's a woke version. No, if I even just act like that's a real word, it's not. It's a brilliant reckoning of the failings of the movie and the original story, but in like the societal impact that it had, where these characters get to make actual amends and like heal instead of just being defeated by this douchebag.
Beat each other up. Yeah.
Yeah. And it acknowledges like the choices that Ramona made. Like she kind of breezes past it in the movie. Like, yeah, I dabbled in being a bitch. Like, no, you were like super shitty too at one point. And all these people are just legitimately hurt individuals, right? That haven't been able to heal.
Yeah.
Anyway, I just was so surprised by that tactic that the show took. And it is again from Brian O'Malley and Edgar Wright, the show as well. So super recommend that if you're a huge fan of this movie. I think it works as an incredible companion piece 13 years later with the movie.
Honestly, like the way the characters end up in Scott Pilgrim Takes Off, I much prefer the way where they end up in this movie. Like it's much more satisfying as a fan of these characters to see like, I love how they take that character. Other than that,
most of them are dead. Yes.
Yeah. The end of this movie, most people are dead. Surprisingly.
They're just a pile of coins.
Yeah. But so overall, Great movie.
Yes, it's a phenomenal film and a seminal work for millennials for sure. And I adore, you guys know, you may not know, but I'll tell you now, I'm goo goo for Brie Larson.
Gaga even?
Yes. Goo goo for Mary Elizabeth Winstead. Jason Schwartzman. I just love all these people dearly. And seeing them all together in this film where most of them started is just really fun for me. Huge fan of the band Metric. Launched to stardom because of this movie.
Don't even get me started. So Metric, if you guys don't know, is like my favorite modern band.
The Clash at Demonhead, the main song of this movie is a real song by a band named Metric. It wasn't created by Beck. And Steve got me hip to that when we started doing this podcast. You know, I was a big fan of this movie. We talked about it and you're like, you should check out Metric. You know, it's a real song, a real band that I love. Because I talked about how much I love female vocalists. You know, mm-hmm. Dude, Paramore and shit, you know.
Love.
And you're like, dude, Metric, that's my jam. Big fan.
Yeah.
Listen to that song all the time.
And if you like the Brie Larson version, you can also like the Metric version. Yes. You got two great versions of an amazing song.
It's a banger for sure.
Also, there's another band called... The Broken Social Scene, which is basically like a big Canadian, like super group of like a bunch of popular Canadian bands sometimes come together and form the Broken Social Scene.
Mm-hmm. It's like a K-pop, the members change.
Yeah. Like sometimes there's six members, sometimes there's 19.
Yeah.
It's one of those. Metric has been involved with them. Stars, Feast, a bunch of very popular Canadian bands have in one way, shape or form been a part of this band.
Brian O'Malley is Canadian, I imagine.
Super Canadian.
Okay.
Yeah. A lot of the
places. Edgar Wright's not. So I'm trying to find the connection.
You know, Brian Lee O'Malley, like a lot of the locations they go to, like he just lives in Toronto and that's like where he went to school or where he went to the library. You know, it's very personal to his story. But so the Broken Social Scene has a song in this called Anthem of a 17-Year-Old Girl, which is Knive Chow's, you know, song. But also they've created the songs for Crashing the Boys. So so sad. Like all that. That's so a Broken Social sad. Scene. Like, They created that music, but then the actor sang it.
Awesome.
Just a lot of great music in this band or in this movie.
Yeah, and the movie was a failure.
Colossal failure.
We should point that out as well. It grossed less than $50 million on an $85 million production budget. So I'm assuming with advertising, it lost over $100 million. Mm-hmm. And the reviews were mostly positive, but not very enthusiastically.
But I think over time, it's become like a huge cult.
Absolutely. Classic, a cult classic.
Which I remember it being incredibly shocking that this movie failed as hard as it did, because the Comic-Con before this, they had a Comic-Con panel where they're like, hey, we're talking about Scott Pilgrim. It's so great. Which, by the way, surprise for you, we're showing the entire movie here. And so if you were at that panel, you got to see the whole Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
Let's dive into it. Let's dive into this failure of a wonderful classic. And there's so many details in this movie, and
it's dense.
It, like any Edgar Wright film, it really, really rewards repetitive watches, repeat reviewing. Even I've seen this movie 20 times, and watching it last night, I was just catching little jokes in the background. I was waiting for the beat of my favorite joke, and then I would catch something young Neil saying in the background or something and just laugh.
Yeah.
But it starts off really rough. I mean, the first line in the movie is Scott Pilgrim is dating a high schooler.
Not so long ago, in the mysterious land of Toronto, Canada, Scott Pilgrim is dating a high schooler.
Yeah. He's 22 years old.
Casey Kasem.
Dating Knives Chow, who is 17 years old. And they don't do anything. They've never even held hands. I want to stress that. But it's not a good look, as Wallace says. But she has the capacity to geek. I just love the dialogue, because obviously Steven Stills wants her to freak out about his band. And she's going to like geek out. And he's like, oh, she'll be chill. I want her to geek out. Oh, she has the capacity to geek. Yeah, I'm sure she could, you know. And then we get the band practice and this phenomenal opening credits, where I guess what Edgar Wright did is film that same shot and put the carpet down and stuff, but like in a warehouse. I think that's practical, right?
Yeah, it's a
like
practical
long room.
Yeah, it's a practical effect of them in a very long room where he's pulling the camera back, and Knives and young Neil on the couch are just like 20 feet away from the band.
I love
playing.
That.
In my notes, I have it during the scene, I have it written, we're 3 minutes in and I fucking love this movie so goddamn much. The We Are Sex Bomb song that leads into the opening, the credits. gets me so goddamn hyped.
Oh, like I meant to wear my Sex Bob-omb shirt.
Oh, well, you work enough though, buddy.
What a loser.
But yeah, that pullback and you see the band. And I don't know if you pay attention to Michael Cera when they're in that wide shot. Michael Cera is giving. Mm-hmm. Like he's just like jamming out so hard. And he's,
I think
like,
he plays.
Bopping around. Yeah, so every one of the actors, so Allison Pill, Mark Webber, who plays Stephen Stills, and I can't remember the guy who plays young Neil. All three of them never played an instrument before, and they had 2 weeks to like learn their instruments before production.
That's what I love about grunge in general. That's how the actual musicians were. Yeah. They weren't very good. In fact, they scoffed at people that were, you know what I mean? Like, oh, what am I going to solo? You fucking cock rock nerd. and that was like, so as like an untalented kid, you just learn a few power chords and scoff at real talented people.
Right.
And make your music, you know?
But to your point, Michael Cera actually is a talented bassist.
Yeah.
And he had to, according to
dumb it down. Yeah. Cause when he's battling, Todd, it's just like he's doing a bunch of nothing.
Like he's just playing two chords.
Yeah. Not even chords. They're just like little notes on the E string. And then Todd's doing these complicated like solos and stuff. Really fun stuff though. But Knives is struck. She's never heard their band before. She's like obsessed with Sex Bob-omb at this point. And then, you know, the next scene, Scott's super happy. He's talking about how Knives is great. And you can tell that young Neil actually really likes Knives. And Neil's whole character shtick is that he's dumb as shit. And Kim kind of hates Scott, right? So are you really happy or are you really evil? So it's not like the movie doesn't call attention to that Scott's a piece of shit. Wallace mm-hmm. calls him out. His sister calls him out. And Kim repeatedly calls him out.
Yeah.
But I still don't feel like the movie really adequately makes him reckon with that, you know? Because at the end of this film, making amends is not about saying you're sorry. Sorry is bullshit. You say you're sorry all the time. It doesn't mean anything. Oh, I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. Right. That's just a way of wanting somebody to absolve you. Whereas an amends is actually like, what can I do actively to make this right? You have to take an action. Right. So anyway, we'll get there.
Fun little story, little factoid is in the movie, Scott's supposed to be 22.
Yeah.
Knives is 17. Stacy Pilgrim, his sister, is supposed to be 18.
Correct.
Michael Cera is actually 3 years younger than both Anna Kendrick and Ellen Wong. I just thought that was interesting.
He's younger than Knives Chow?
Yeah. Like the actual actors are, he's younger than both those women, which I thought was interesting.
Aha. And this is pre Pitch Perfect, I think.
Oh yeah.
And definitely pre Trolls.
Definitely pre, is this the pre Trolls world that we live in right now? It
is. This is pre Trolls. We cut to Wallace Wells, played by Kieran Culkin.
Love him.
Long before, this is like Igby Goes Down era. This is long before Succession or anybody really appreciated Kieran Culkin. All the stuff in his apartment belongs to Wallace, except for the pile of Scott's clothes and the coat.
I love that kind of tracking shot where it's like blunk, blunk, blunk in it, but it has that Xerox machine sound effect. Yeah. The camera moving and labeling all of their stuff and Scott like has nothing.
Yeah.
You're totally my bitch forever.
Yeah, they sleep in the same bed. It's my gay friend Wallace, which he repeatedly refers to him as such. And he was recently dumped by, or a year ago, was dumped by Envy Adams. We don't know much about her, but we know that he's been destroyed by that for the last year.
She who shall not be named.
That's right. This is a post-Harry Potter world.
We don't use the E word in this house.
That's right. And it goes to him picking up knives at school. Yikes. And Wallace tells her, you're too good for him. Run. And they have that whole conversation. And then they're playing like a Dance Dance Revolution ninja game. Mm-hmm. Is this a real game that you're familiar with, Steve? I am not.
No. I'm pretty sure it's a fake game, but it's meant to emulate Dance Dance Revolution.
Yeah, but also there's like a fighting component to it.
But because of I think they're adding like the ninja element to it because of the world. Like in the comic book, Roxy's supposed to be like a legit ninja.
Yeah.
But I think here this is kind of rough to say, but I think here they're just implying the ninja aspect to Knives specifically.
That's what I thought too. And I didn't like it because he does say she's Chinese a bunch. Mm-hmm. Her name's Knives Chow. She's Chinese.
Or then when she like I was going to ask you to come have dinner with my parents. It's like, so like Chinese food.
I know. It's not funny. That's one of the first times I caught that was my viewing last night where I was like, huh.
But this is when we get the famous like, did you know that the original name for Pac-Man is Paku Paku?
Which I'm sure is a true factoid.
That is a true factoid.
I did not know that. Which means something like the flip-flap of the mouth, right?
Yep. To flap one's mouth is what it means in Japanese. But this is actually like an important scene because it shows that Knives and Scott actually are like, you know, they work together well.
Yeah. Yes.
Which comes back later.
They're good friends. Yeah. But
he is still a dick because like you get the continue 10, 9. And
he makes her pay for it.
Just like, you're going to throw the quarters in there. And she's like, oh, sorry. Like,
she's trying to have an emotional moment, but also he like, it's her money.
Yeah.
It was the implication there. And they go on like this all day date. And it reminds you of being, I know that he's not a kid. He's an adult. And that's part of the, problematic nature of this, but also like, I remember being a kid and like, that was what you would do with your girlfriend, you know, go to the thrift shop, go to the arcade, go get some pizza.
He has that line that's so rough where he's like, she's only allowed out during the daytime. So we're not
really dating. And Wallace is like, oh, that's better. Yeah. You're making this sound great.
It's not really like dating. It's like playtime.
Yeah.
Like, oh.
So we see them at the record store. And one of the shticks of this movie is that Julie, played by Aubrey Plaza,
fucking Plaza,
works everywhere. And she works at the record store.
Julie has issues.
And Knives wants a Clash of Demonhead album. And Scott never tells her that he used to date Envy, the lead singer of that band. But he just like throws her Clash of Demonhead album aside. Like, definitely don't need to listen to them. He won't take her into his house. He's like, it's a man cave situation. No girls allowed.
Secret lair.
Do you want to see where I grew up? And then he just turns around because he grew up right across the street. That's his childhood home.
But he's acting incredibly cocky around her and like as if he is a rock star. He's like kind of aloof.
Our band is kind of already a big deal, but it'd be cool if strangers wore our t-shirts.
And he says something like, I knew I personally rocked, but it's cool that you think that we collectively rock as a unit.
Yeah. 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 Which he doesn't. He's actually very insecure. He's still mourning Envy and he's using Knives to feel better. Right. Mm-hmm. Which the movie does acknowledge, maybe just not hard enough. But then Ramona Flowers skates through his dreams, which she uses his hyperspace highway of a mind to deliver Amazon packages faster.
Yeah, there's a really convenient hyperspace.
The magical realism of this movie, I love that it's never remarked upon. You know, that's one of the charming things about it is that you just kind of go with it.
In the book, there's like this really funny exchange because they kind of expand on this exchange where Scott's like, I'm sorry, what, a hyperspace highway? She's like, yeah, you guys don't have that in Canada? And like...
Yeah.
She's like, oh, okay, weird. I wondered why no one else was in there when I would drive through them. Like,
yeah. It's great.
Like, it's just this funny kind of
that line's in the movie, but it's not, it's just so one-off.
Yeah. I just like it's a little bit of a self-deprecating humor on like the Canadian.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, like, yeah. Cause Brian, Lee O'Malley is from Canada. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, I have a note that says other Scott. It's because Wallace has a guy named Scott in his bed because Wallace is a bit of a player and he calls him Other Scott. And so they're all three just sleeping there together at one point when he wakes up from this dream.
And you just want to say,
yeah,
I'd be okay if they could just recast Other Scott because I don't like that actor.
You just don't like him?
Yeah, I don't know why. Like the way his line delivery, I'm just like, dude, what are you doing?
I thought you were going to say, I'd be okay with sleeping with Kieran Culkin or something.
Yes. I 100%.
I was like, okay, yeah.
I would love for Wallace to be a catty bitch to me. Please,
yes.
Please do that to me, Daddy.
You're going to be the Jimmy for sure.
Yeah. Who the fuck is Jimmy?
That's right. So he sees Ramona at the library and he's like, oh my God, that's a real person. And he's with Knives. And she's like, do you know her? And he just ignores her. And then they end up going to Jules' party. Which none of them are happy about. Young Neil is like, I guess, bored as well, but he's more like,
oh, this is where we get like the classic really, really good Edgar Wright scene transitions.
Because
there's like five or six location changes within a minute and it's all seamlessly done because he's in the library and then like he's playing the one note at band practice. And then where are we going? Oh, they're outside on the street now. Like, oh, this is going to be so boring. Oh, they're at the party. Like it's just this really quick.
I'm so bored. I have to pee. And then Young Neil's like, I have to pee.
I'm so doo-doo. I'm going to go pee due to boredom.
Yeah. But he's not drinking alcohol. He's drinking Coke Zero. And I'm like, is Scott actually Steve? Steve loves Coke Zero.
I do. Yeah.
I do.
And but we get Nelson Franklin, who plays Como, kind of pops up.
The guy who knows everybody.
The guy who knows everybody. This is one of my favorite jokes in the whole movie where he goes up to Como because he knows everybody. He's like, hey, Como, do you know a girl who looks like this? And he just holds up this like
shitty drawing.
He's like, oh, yeah, that's Ramona Flowers.
Yeah.
She's American.
She's from America. And so he goes, she's supposed to come to this party. So he goes around the party looking for Ramona. And we get one of the most iconic shots from the movie that like, all the negative space of the wall with her off to the right.
This one leaning. Girl.
This one girl. And then he like deletes the words as he slides up to her, tries to tell her the Pac-Man story, but unlike the confidence that he has with knives, he fucks it all up. And at the end, she's just staring at him like, okay. And he goes, I'll leave you alone forever now. And she says, thank you. And walks away.
This is one of the things I really wish they would have, cause they removed this from the book, but I wish they would have kept it in the movie. Cause one of the things that I criticize about this movie is, Ramona actually kind of giving Scott a chance.
The celerity with which she falls for Scott is bizarre in the movie.
Is bizarre, but there is a small detail I think they should have kept in where, cause he asks her at one point, am I dreaming? Because he's literally been seeing her in his dreams.
Right.
And so when he says it out loud, he thinks, oh shit, I just said a dumb thing. She also thinks that and she goes away. But later on in the movie, when he tells her like, this is going to sound weird, but I think I've been seeing you in my dreams. And she realizes, oh, you're the dude that I've been driving through your dreams. I thought you were just crazy. I'm so sorry. I really thought you're just being a weird dude. Turns out I actually was in your dreams. That is an important, I think, connection, at least early on in their relationship in the books, that I think they should have left in.
Yeah,
because it makes her seem like, oh shit, I'm really sorry about that.
Yeah.
Bad. But they kind of skim over that.
My bad on the trespassing kind of thing. And then he starts interviewing everybody at the party about Ramona.
He stalked her until she left the party.
He's like watching her go upstairs and stuff. Jules forbids him from hitting on Ramona because he's known as a bit of a player, right? He's known as a rake, if you will, is what they would have called him in Victorian England. Mm-hmm. he's been with Lisa. He's been with Holly. He's been with Kim, the drummer. He's broken all of their hearts.
I love
something
that.
Like, he does.
Me and Kim are all good now. And then it pans to Kim and there's like that scary music. Yeah. Just staring at him.
Yeah, definitely not good. Wallace tells him he should break up with Knives.
Guess who's drunk?
And he's like,
I guess Wallace.
I'm guessing Wallace texts his sister while passed out.
How do you even do that?
And Scott immediately starts ordering from Amazon because he knows that she's an Amazon delivery girl and then starts waiting for the package immediately. I like how Scott Pilgrim Takes Off does this a lot better and actually like leans into it. And he's just waiting for days and days.
Yeah. I do love the how clueless he is. Like, hey man, what's the website for Amazon.ca?
Which I guess is Canadian Amazon.
Yeah. And he's like Amazon.ca.
Oh, okay.
But then when he gets on the computer, he's like, dude, this thing claims I have mail. Dude, now I'm reading it.
Yeah, he's so amazed at email. He gets an email from Matthew Patel explaining the League of Evil Exes and the challenge that he's about to submit. He's like, blah, 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 blah. God. And it looks like, I love the shtick where it looks like it's dawning on him.
This
means this is so boring. And he deletes it. so he's about to break up with Knives, but doesn't do it. And because he's a coward. And then Steven tells him that they've booked a show.
They're doing a bad job on the ninja game now.
Yeah. And then he's just so busy thinking about Ramona. They're not connecting. And he books a show at the Rocket for the Sex Bomb. And the winner gets a record deal with G-Man Graves.
Indie producer of the millennium. You'll have cool kids there too.
One of the bands they're battling is Crash and the Boys. And you can hear young Neil in the background say, is that the band with Crash and those boys?
I love young Neil. we get the P bar.
Yeah. Quick so, piss. That one.
This is a really subtly funny joke. Cause yeah, he goes in, he does the real quick P bar deletion. And then he like does the most half-ass hand wash.
But I thought that it was brutally honest.
And yeah, I fucking loved it.
I'm sorry. But in the way that he dries each hand, one on the hand towel and one on the bath towel, just like barely like,
yeah,
you know, when you're a young man, that's about if do that at all.
We've all done it once or twice today.
It's like the Shape of Water thing. Maybe you should wash your hands before you pee so you don't get your dick dirty.
That's actually quite brilliant.
Yeah. Have you ever seen that movie?
I have, but I didn't.
Michael Shannon's character always washes his hands before he pisses. And there's a big scene about it. But I actually worked with a guy.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Because, you know, you're in the bathroom, y'all, there's urinals and stuff. And my boss is a giant muscled man at the time. And he goes in.
Is he a real shrimpy nerd now?
No. He still is. I imagine I just don't see him anymore because I don't have that job. But he washes his hands and then he walks to the urinal and starts to pee. And so we have the kind of relationship where he pokes fun at me a lot. So then I'm trying to like rib him. You know what I mean? So I'm like, you're not going to wash your hands after you piss, you know, because I noticed that he did it before, but I wasn't trying to harp on that. I was just trying to harp on him heading straight for the door after he zipped up. And he's like, I wash my hands first. Is your dick dirty? Because mine's not. And I don't want to get my dick dirty with all the germs from the world. And I was like, I guess, man. Like, he took it so seriously. And I was like, I don't know where to go with this. So that's a thing. At least one person and a character from that movie believes.
I'm just saying, of all the things to have personality traits in common with in The Shape of Water, Michael Chan is probably the one you want to least have things in common with.
Yeah, but maybe he's onto something.
Maybe.
This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's the holiday season, the season of gift giving. If you're like me, you've waited until late December to think about it, and now everything that you try to order on a website is not going to arrive until after Christmas. That's the opposite of the holiday spirit. That's stressful. We've got a gift that you can give yourself. You can get a subscription to BetterHelp and give yourself the gift of therapy. If you've never tried therapy before, it's a great way to get into it. You can fill out a questionnaire and get matched with a therapist. And if you don't like them or you're not meshed, it's easy to switch. You can just get another one. And it's all online, so you don't have to stress about the traffic and the driving and the location and all the logistical things that always help you talk yourself out of giving therapy a try. So I think you should do it. This holiday season, lower the stress a little bit. Give yourself the gift of mental wellness. So in the season of giving, give yourself what you need with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/streamingthings today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/streamingthings.
Ho, 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 happy holidays and happy streaming, everybody. This month, we want to give a special shout out to all of our patrons who keep the lights on at Streaming Things, but we especially want to give a special shout out to the super patrons. They are Kaylee Sampson, Stan Valentino, Anthony Corona, Infamous, Brent Stradamus, Sunshine, Huckleberry Cauliflower, Optimist, Mike from New Hampshire, Brett X, Emily Scarano, Little Tickler, Svento7, Jace Gramo, Haley Anderson, A.K. Ashley Ray, Adam Busby, Wendy O'Loughlin, Joey Stewart, Jason Hawkins, Big Butthorn, Conrad, Rabbit Dog in a Barbie Car, Charlie Friday, Alexis Adler, Linda Eklund, Emmy, Joe Velez, John Collins, Amber McVeigh, Amanda King, Trisha Bueller, Sun Loving Mortal, Suzanne Rode, Lauren Waller, Jadinklage Morgoon, Jen Robinson, Kalisha Reeves, Aaron Armstrong, Kevin Strother, Orion Moore, Ashley Power, Stephen V, Casey McCain, and of course, Enza. Thank you all so much for supporting the show. And with that, let's get back to it.
But yeah, this is the where things kind of heat up a bit and the plot starts to get going again.
It's kind of this fun little bit where he walks out of the bathroom and he sees Ramona and she's skating up to his front door. And so he like realizes that he's dreaming. So he wakes up and answers the door before she can even ring the doorbell.
It's a great transition. It's so confusing, honestly. I think this movie demands rewatches. Because it's like
it's moving so fast.
Yeah, he was peeing. He was at band practice. And now I guess he was sleeping because that's another dream with Ramona. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But it's great. She tells him, yeah, subspace highway in your head. You don't have those in Canada. Just kind of hand waves it off. The fact that she can dream traverse. He won't sign for the package because he wants a date with her. And she's clearly not interested, which is another like problematic strike two from things that we've learned about ourselves as men. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? Yeah. Not to do. You can yada, yada, yada. It's a great movie. And then finally, she's like, if I agree to go out with you, will you sign this? And he's like, yes. And then throws the package in the trash because whatever he ordered, he didn't actually want it.
Took 33 takes for Michael Cera to throw that package behind his back and land it in the trash
can. Oh,
that is a practical shot.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Funny enough, though, the signature is digitally added in.
Interesting.
I do love the exchange where she's like, we actually met before at that party. And she goes, were you the Pac-Man guy? And he's like, oh, no, was some other dick.
That guy was, that was some other creep. I was the other guy.
I was the other guy. That was some total ass.
How about 8 p.m.? And then it's 8 p.m. They hang out. He shows up late because he thought she was too cool to show up on time, but she's there waiting for him. Nice little touch. Mm-hmm. She says something innocuous, like where she just says something about a tongue. And he goes, tongue.
Oh, yeah. She goes, act of God is a pretty good excuse for a lousy date. And he goes, this is a date. And she goes, oh, did I say that? Slip of the tongue.
Tongue.
it's hey, funny. There's a thingy nearby.
Yeah. And then they have tea at Ramona's because it's too cold. And they end up making out, right?
There's that epic, incredible shot of her just listing off every type of tea she has.
Yeah.
And it's a really great scene.
Did you make some of those up?
You made some of those up, right? She actually memorized every single one of those teas.
And they both opted for sleepy time tea, mm-hmm. which is a good kind of tea to have at the end.
Sleepy time tea.
And she kind of, you know, she plots this out. You know, she knew he was going to wonder where his blankie was and catch her in her undies. Sorry, I'm just cold. And then she just warms him up with her body. But my body.
What about our tea?
I could not have tea. and I'll give Scott some credit here. He does handle this well. You know, they get hot and heavy in their undies. And then she says, I changed my mind. Not having sex anymore. And he's like, that's okay. This is nice.
I think I needed this, whatever this was.
It was a very mature way for a to handle, you know, the way you should handle someone retracting their consent. Mm-hmm. But she reserves the right to change her mind later, right? But don't worry, I'm not kicking you out. You can stay here. And they sleep together quite literally. They don't have sex.
Hey, can this not be a one night stand?
Especially since I didn't get any, which was a funny joke. That's the kind of joke I would make. And then he's like, I was kidding. And then he asked for her number. And
girl number.
And we get the seven X's on there.
When I don't know about you, but when I actually got a girl's number, like around that age, I had almost the exact same reaction every time.
Wow,
girl number.
I don't think I ever did that again. It was always my friends and I always just had their number already. Never had like some real awkward date experiences, you know, talking to strangers, hoping to score, all that stuff. Never did that. And then at the rocket, Knives, because that's where he invites her to, mm-hmm. like, come see us play tonight. Knives just jumps up and kisses him, which is strange because they'd never kissed before. Never even held hands.
Knives is, she's ready.
It's going in there.
She loves him. Stacy's there. Her boyfriend, is it Jimmy?
Jimmy.
Jimmy's there.
I'm almost positive. Yeah.
Yeah. I love
Wallace is there.
I love the shot. Like after Knives comes in and kisses Scott, there's this like really fun, like where everyone's like looking at each other.
Yeah.
You get like the anime, like streak lines.
Ramona doesn't like really think anything of it, you know?
Yeah. That could just be like, huh. Okay, weird.
But he ends up seeing them talking on the balcony and he's, oh no.
And they have like the horror novel kind of shot, like, oh no, this is a nightmare. And like the orc music's playing.
We have to play now. We have to play loud. So he slaps Steven, who's always freaking out before every show.
Fun little bit of costuming. Scott's wearing a Plum Tree t-shirt uh-huh. in the scene. Plum Tree is a band that had a song in 1998 called Scott Pilgrim. And that is where Riley O'Malley got the name for this character.
Riley O'Malley's a music fan like Edgar.
Mm-hmm. Actually, that song, Scott Pilgrim, is in this movie.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Nice.
But Crash and the Boys, there's actually a girl
so
drummer.
So sad.
This one's called So Sad. And I love Wallace. Like, it's not a race, guys.
Yeah. This one's for the guy on the balcony.
It's called We Hate You, Please Die.
One of my favorite jokes from the movie is in this scene. The sex bomb finally starts playing. They start rocking pretty hard. Honestly, I'm into it. Is this the garbage band thing? No, that was a practice one.
No, Garbage Truck is the scene.
I love that song.
Knives faints because she's just such a big fan.
Knives faints. It cuts to Neil. And there's a lyric, and I do this all the time, and this is why I laugh so hard, because it does. It is so embarrassing. I do it all, especially when my wife and I are jamming. Like, I always do this. Because I was raised in a time where you bought a CD, you'd open the book, all the lyrics to the songs was in there. Oh, and you would literally just read them while you listened, right? Nowadays, if I'm listening to Nicki Minaj or something like that, or Megan Thee Stallion, and I'm trying I'm trying to wop out or whatever.
Wop out with your cock out.
I apparently don't have a good ear for words. So I will sing completely wrong words, not only not remembering correctly, but just words that I think those are the words.
Yeah.
And my wife's like, she can just hear it clear. She's like, what the fuck is wrong with you? That's not what they're saying at all. So that happens to me all the time. But specifically, this kind of thing will happen a lot in music because they go, oh my. And Neil sings, oh no.
Yeah.
Oh no. And then like covers it up real quick and looks really dumb.
It's like a really awkward.
I fucking love that because it's like, oh, that's me. Ah.
Yeah. That's such a relatable moment.
Yeah. And it doesn't need to be there, but I love it so much.
Mm-hmm. Wallace is trying to hit on Jimmy.
He's been successfully.
Hey, Jimmy.
It looks like making Jimmy uncomfortable.
Do they rock or do they suck?
They haven't started playing yet.
That was a trick, Jimmy. Or that was a test.
You passed.
You passed.
And apparently he does this all the time because later when she catches him, she's like, Wallace again? He's always sleeping with her boyfriends. But Matthew Patel shows up, busts through the ceiling.
Matthew Patel.
He's the first evil ex-boyfriend. They battle. Scott didn't read the email, so he doesn't know what's going on, which further infuriates Patel.
Are you a pirate?
Yeah. Pirates are in right year? Now. He throws fireballs. He has demon hipster chicks.
Hell yeah.
And so we find out that Ramona dated him in seventh grade and he defeats Matthew Patel. Oh, sweet coins. And starts picking them up. Oh, it's not even enough for a bus. I'll give you the rest.
Yeah, there's a bunch of fun stuff in this. The KO sound effect is actually from Sega's Virtua Fighter.
Oh, really?
Yeah, KO! and then, Matthew Patel is actually the only evil ex that's got defeat single-handedly. Everyone else, he gets help from somebody, one of his friends, which is interesting.
And it's weird that Patel's the first one because he's like got powers and stuff.
Yeah, he's got mystical powers.
He's I guess he's the first, like their relationship was the longest to go. Is that what it is?
No, because she said they only dated for like 2 weeks or something.
No, but like it was seventh grade.
Oh, like furthest back.
Yeah, okay. In time.
And yeah, I think that's how it goes. It's chronological.
And like Gideon was their most recent boyfriend, so he's the leader.
Yeah. Yeah. And also I love how when she's telling the backstory of like when they dated, they're using actual art from the comic. Like that's like
yeah, panel that's what the comic looks stuff. Like.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's not what the comic always looks like. Cause in the, when she's telling the background in the comic, he draws it a little bit more high schoolery. Mm-hmm. So that's why it has that visual look, but that's a similar style.
Yeah.
Of it. But yeah, he beats Matthew Patel who explodes into coins. Oh, sweet coins.
And then Cypher Bomb actually wins this round of the Battle of the Bands.
Cause Crash and the Boys are dead. They win by default. Oh,
true. Because
when he's whipping out his fireballs, me and my fireballs.
He kills him. And my demon hipster chicks.
I love how it becomes a Bollywood fight. It's so good.
Yeah, he vaporizes Crash and the Boys. And so they win, but Ramona and Scott dip out. That's where she tells him about her seven evil exes. And he's like, oh, so we're dating? And she's like, I guess. Does that mean we can make out? Sure. awesome.
And then we get the Seinfeld.
The sitcom intro. Somebody got to second base tonight.
Well, maybe first and a half.
And that somebody is me. I don't know if you're picking that up.
And they got a studio audience for this whole scene.
He tells Wallace he needs to leave his apartment because Ramona's coming over and he doesn't want him gang up the place. but first, Wallace is watching a Lucas Lee marathon.
Well, he's like, I have to issue one of my famous ultimatums.
Break up with knives.
This one might live in infamy. Break up with knives. You have to do that now. And it turns out that Wallace brought Jimmy home. And so Scott has like, oh, double standard.
Yeah.
As he walks
I don't make the gay rules.
You take it up with Liberace's ghost.
and so then we get the scene where Knives wants him to meet her parents. And he's like, so we're having Chinese food? And I'm ashamed that I laughed, but I did. And that's when she tells him that she's in love. And we get the like love smoke words. And he like waves it out of his face like a cigarette. And then he does, in fact, break up with Knives.
Mm-hmm. Says that he's too old for her.
Well, he gives her all kinds of excuses at first, which that's a valid one. And then at some point,
I say that because the age thing is an important impetus for what Knives does. Because she thinks that he ends up with Ramona because Ramona's older. And so
that's why he's with that fat chick.
Yeah. I only knew there was good music like 2 months ago. She's got like 5 years on me on the good music track.
Yeah. She just found out about good music. And then he's like sad on the bus for a second and then starts thinking about Ramona and just forgets completely about Knives, who's in fact devastated.
Yeah. Poor Knives.
We get more band practice. And then he goes back to Wallace's house.
New.
And that's when he tells him about his new girlfriend and he just leaves band practice. He's like, you know, young Neil knows all my parts. So he's selfish to the band. He's selfish to Knives. Like, you know what I mean? He's just always.
And also he's really, really weird about Ramona dyeing her hair. So she dyes her hair blue and he's just, that almost completely wrecks him. Like how dare you dye your hair? And
I don't think it's meant to be like he's controlling of her. It might be, but I took it like it's so not him. He's such an anxious person. He hasn't cut his hair since Envy dumped him 3 hours after he last cut his hair.
Well, he cuts his own hair. Yeah.
He's so unable to process making decisions like that without wondering how other people are going to react. You know, he's worried so much about what other people think of him that he can't process someone just not giving a fuck what other people think of them.
Yeah.
Because he's like thrown into an abyss of confusion because he even says like, she didn't even make a big deal out of her or anything. How am I going to like live up to that?
So, yeah. He's projecting his own insecurities on her.
Yeah.
And it also like makes him way more insecure in their own
day. I love that shot when she first arrives with the blue hair and it's just him in the background, just staring right at the hair.
You changed your hair.
Yeah, I do that like every week. And in the show, she dyes her hair at the beginning of every episode.
Yeah.
In the cartoon on Netflix. That was neat.
But yeah, Wallace pretty much tries to give him a pep talk, like, you know, get your act together. But when you flake out, come meet me at the castle. So then we get like a 15 minutes later and they're doing the garlic bread thing. Bread makes you fat.
Bread makes you fat. One of the best memes. Yeah.
30 minutes later, he's like, I wrote you a song. And he like,
that's the Ramona's ballad that plays like three times throughout this movie.
The Beck song. And then 45 minutes later, your hair's pretty shaggy. And then he gives the explanation of why he cuts his own hair. It's because Envy broke up with him. Also, little cameo, the announcer that's describing like, Scott hasn't cut his hair in over 3 days. That's Bill Hader.
Really?
Yeah. That is Bill Hader making a little cameo.
Everyone I've ever loved is in the cast of this movie.
In this movie, yeah.
Holy shit.
And if you listen to it again, knowing it's Bill Hader, you're like, oh, fuck, that 100% is Bill Hader.
It's still Bill Hader. Wow. I love that when it cuts back to him, it's just his hat is on.
they do that joke several times. Yeah. It works every time.
Every single time. I'm going to go re-rate this. It is definitely not just 4 stars.
It's 5, baby.
And it cuts to them walking because that's an excuse for him to have his hat on. Mm-hmm. No, I just like walking, putting one foot in front of the other.
One foot in front of the other.
And then they walk to the movie set that Wallace said that he was going to go to earlier. It's a movie starring Lucas Lee. And that's when they realize that Lucas Lee is an ex, the next evil ex of Ramona. Oh, and he ends up having to fight the entire stunt team, which is a great.
Oh my God. I just have to say, I think my favorite part of the movie is Chris Evans as Lucas Lee.
Such a good character.
He is hamming it up so much. And you can tell he's having the time of his life playing this character.
Yes.
It's so much fun. And it's so much
going
different.
Going for the Oscar this year.
Going for the Oscar this year, bro.
Oh, that's actually hilarious.
Literally everything he says in this, like, he's only in the movie for what, like 5 minutes? But everything he says is fucking quotable.
My wife, she actually hates most of my mannerisms, but she does get a kick out of it. Because every time I get a meme or something from one of you guys.
It's actually hilarious.
I go, it's actually hilarious.
He's pretty good, huh? Sometimes I let him do the wide shots when I want to get blazed in my Winnie.
My Winnie.
But yeah, like he comes out to the Universal theme, which is fucking hilarious. Yeah, like you said, his stunt team beats him up and they have like a really epic fight.
But he can't defeat him, so he has to trick him with his wits.
Yeah, he's like, you're a pro skater, right? Not only just a pro, pretty good skater, got him on skate company. He has like a skate company
tattooed on him, yeah.
Somebody get me my board.
So do you think you could do a thingy on that rail over there? It's called a grind, bro. It's called a grind. So could you do a grind thingy on that rail? You're not going to goad me into doing this dangerous trick. There's chicks over there watching.
somebody get me my board.
And then he does this incredible, this gag shouldn't work, but it does, when it keeps cutting back to Scott. Wow. But the third one is what gets me. Where it cut, it does a slow-mo version and then cuts away from it. And then he ends up like exploding at the bottom.
Totally bailed.
He went over 300 kilometers per hour because it's in Canada. Or anywhere but America, really. Let's be honest.
Yeah.
So he defeated sort of Lucas Lee. And then we cut back to.
But Ramona's bail.
She disappears.
She disappears. Yeah.
He can't get a hold of her. He leaves a message and he tells, I think he's talking to Wallace, where he says, I think something about the L word. He's like, you thinking about using the L word? And he goes,
oh no. Wallace tells him, it's like, if you really want to fight, if you really want this girl, you got to fight for it. It's time to break out the L word.
And he goes, lesbian?
The other L word.
Lesbians. So, by the way, a fun little tidbit, and it's brought back at the end when he accidentally tells her, I'm a lesbian with you.
I said lesbians.
Either that or he's just has a fear of commitment and he did that on purpose. Maybe that's what you're supposed to read into that character. But you're aware that Ewan McGregor is married to Mary Elizabeth Winstead.
I'm very aware.
You don't know which one of those people you're more jealous of if you're me.
Same. I really hope that they greet each other every day by going, hello there.
And then sex.
Yeah.
Just vigorous.
Just mushing parts together.
But he'll fuck with her like out of love, you know, and he wears the shirt that says, I'm in lesbians with you.
Oh, this is Ewan McGregor?
Yeah, Ewan McGregor has a shirt that says, I'm in lesbians with you.
That's adorable.
That he wears when he's with her pretty often. And I think that that's fucking adorable.
I was so happy when she got cast in the Ahsoka show because I'm like, oh, they're both in Star Wars now.
Oh, yeah. I didn't even track that.
I really want her character.
Too bad that show was rotten ass garbage. Because I love her.
It was not great.
So then after he can't, you know, he says, I'm, you know, lesbian, that whole thing. Envy is the one that calls.
Hey, Scott.
And then Knives shows up. Instead of Ramona at the door.
This is a really funny visual gag because, yeah, Knives is at the door and Wallace
he just left.
And you could see Scott in the background, like run back away out of the line of sight as Wallace closed the door. And then he like nosedives through the little window,
through the glass.
And then it cuts back to Knives and you could see him walking in the sidewalk behind her.
But you can see him reach in and grab his jacket too.
Yeah, that too.
And then you can see him walk behind her and she's like, what? Because she saw him, right?
He just left.
It's such a good gag. One of my favorite gifts of all time. I got to use it in the group chat yesterday because when Madison said she wasn't going to make it to the Scott Pilgrim coverage. Oh, yeah. Like, yes, this is Madison.
But yeah, Scott's seeing X's everywhere. He's so much more paranoid.
X-Men patch,
yeah,
which is a gag I've never really put together before, I don't think. Because every time he sees the letter X, he's mad now. So.
There's a really charming scene in the book. It's on the first date with Ramona. She asks him what that patch is on his jacket. And he's like, ah, well, one of us went to the Xavier School for Gifted Youngsters and one of us did not. It's just like one of the, like, I would make that joke if I was in that situation.
That's you trying to get some play.
This will work on the ladies. Have you seen 1990s animated X-Men?
Mm-hmm. And he runs into a third X, but it's actually the fifth one that he fights. I think it's Roxanne, but she can,
Roxy, I think is the fourth.
She can like teleport and, turn into a bat. I'm not really sure what's going on.
So by the way, Roxy is played by Mae Whitman, who, you may recognize as Michael Cera's girlfriend in Arrested Development. She plays her. So if you ever watched Arrested Development, that's who that is, which is kind of funny that they work together on this as well.
Interesting. And Arrested Development is after?
This is before.
Okay, so they had already worked together.
Yeah, Arrested Development was before. Actually,
From Superbad and Arrested Development at this point in time. So he by far the biggest star.
Arrested Development actually, so Edgar Wright credits that show as being the inspiration for why he thought Michael Cera would be a good Scott Pilgrim was because he saw him in Arrested Development. But Roxy, played by Mae Whitman, is... she is also maybe the second most quotable character in this movie. Like every one of her lines are killing. Like, you punch me in the boob.
I'm bi furious.
Prepare to die, obviously. Or like she says some sort of weird convoluted thing. And he goes, what's that from? And she just gets flustered. It's like, my brain.
It's from me. Yeah. This encounter, he just basically tells her, I don't fucking have time for this right now. And she fucks off.
Which is kind of her.
Yeah. It is. So then he goes to see his sister at work, but she leaves because she doesn't want to talk to him and hear his
sorry,
bullshit.
Sorry, I had to go.
And it's Jules.
But she's getting censored.
Yeah, she's doing that herself somehow. Don't worry about it. She keeps saying the fuck word. Bloop. And then he ends up running into Ramona at the coffee shop. Mm-hmm. But right as he's about to finally have some closure there, Envy shows up, who he has been warned is wandering Toronto again. And suddenly he's wearing the hat. Again, this is when the hat gag pops back up because it's Envy. And he's like,
this is played by Brie Larson, Envy Adams.
Yes.
Almost unrecognizable. Like,
yes.
If you had told me if no one told me that was Brie Larson, I would not have thought it was.
So again, I didn't watch this movie on time because of my issues. And so I watched this movie for the first time, I think in 2014. So I lied. So like Room was out, mm-hmm. Short Term 12 was already out. I knew this as incredible, amazing, phenomenal talent, Oscar winning Brie Larson when watching this movie and was like, what? And Andy was like, oh yeah, keep watching. You know what I mean? Because then Jason Schwartzman shows up later and stuff. So he's like, this is a wild movie, dude. Check this out.
You're going to love this.
I think Andy showed it to me. Yeah. So anyway. Brie Larson as Envy shows up. He's suddenly wearing the hat.
She's jealous of Ramona. She invites Sex Bob-omb to play with them she tells them to come visit them at the Lee's Palace.
Yeah, Steven's the one that books it without his permission. And she just drops the line, I dated a Todd once. And he's like, interesting. We find out soon it's the same Todd. Mm-hmm. She also continually corrects him when he keeps calling them seven evil ex-boyfriends. And she's exes, which is because of Roxy. Mm-hmm. In the bed, there's like a gay orgy going on in the bed when he gets home. And one of the boyfriends says, because he's telling him about Ramona and he's like, and you didn't bang her? Are you gay? These are the 2010
Scott.
Jokes. Yeah.
That's Other Scott. This is why I'm like, I'm okay if you cut Other Scott out of this movie. I don't think he's funny.
Yeah. And then Steven books them to open for The Clash at Demon Head.
The Clash at Demon Head.
Well, I want to do a secret show of our band. All our shows are secret shows.
A gig is a gig is a gig is a gig.
Because nobody knows that they're playing. I like that joke.
I love it. There's this also another really funny visual joke where like, come on guys, we need stalkers. And then like whoever it is like walks at a frame and you see
Knives like, is in the window.
Up against the window and it does like, like.
And like, he's like laying on Ramona and she's furiously watching. So this is where she like dyes her hair and freaks out, ranting about the fat chick to her friend.
She's dating a fat ass hipster chick. She's probably like 25.
Yeah. And then she texts Neil to get back at him. I think you're so hot, young Neil.
OMFG.
And then we get the show at the palace where they open for the TCAD. Mm-hmm. And first, I don't remember why I was taking notes. And even though I've seen this movie so many times, I couldn't remember. But he's like, I've got a pee on her. I mean, I've got a pee.
So Knives, Ramona goes to the bathroom. Knives is there with her. Knives has dyed her hair to look exactly like Ramona. And she's just generally creepy to Ramona.
Yeah.
But Ramona comes out and says like, how do you know that girl again? And so his brain cycles through a bunch of excuses and it lands in between two of them.
Oh, okay.
And so he combines it to, I got to pee on her. I got to pee. The excuses on the wheel are she's nobody. She's 40. Idiot. No speak of English. When's dinner? Tell Pac-Man 1980 story. No, you are. Pass out. It was nothing. Who her and I gotta pee. And I think it lands between I gotta pee and
who her.
Yeah.
I gotta pee on her. And then we get the iconic Metric song.
Yes. Black Sheep.
Hello again.
Friend of a friend. I knew you. And then that. And I love the way they cut in between like Envy and Brendan Routh, who plays Todd on bass. Which, by the way, super iconic look, like
the
three on a white shirt and white pants with like the bleached blonde hair.
Yeah.
Very iconic look. But I love
especially when he's full vegan mode and his eyes are glowing.
Yeah. And like they've got that circular, like almost 1950s superpower effect.
Yeah.
Very iconic look. But I love when the Metric song, when you get that guitar and it just keeps cutting back to them, just staring at each other with the lights. It's very hype. Very hype.
And I think that's why people like the Brie Larson version of the song a little more. She does it a little sexier than Metric does.
Well, I have to say, so the Brie Larson version in the movie is different than the Brie Larson version they just released like last year on the
Earth. Oh, is it really?
Because I prefer the Metric version by a mile. But I think that's just because I got a huge crush on Emily Haynes and Metric in general. Like, yeah. I just love the way she sings a lot. So I was listening to the two of them back to back because I've been in a Scott Pilgrim mood like all week. So I've been listening to both versions. And then when I sat down and watched the movie last night, I'm like, this is different. Like, her vocals are way better in the movie than I think on the...
Really?
I don't know, like, if they like lost the original version. So they had Brie Larson. Yeah, because
the movie
like,
is the one they're talking about when they say that, you know?
Yeah. So like, I wonder if like what they released, you know, 2 years ago for the anniversary of the soundtrack was like, maybe they got Brie Larson in 2020 to come in and record something. Cause yeah. It is different. Like, the way she's singing is very different.
Right.
Which is confusing to me, but I'll always stand the Metric version. Cause I love,
they're both fire. So I'll tell you that.
And they are both fire.
And this is where he realized that Todd is the same Todd. They share the same Todd of hatred. And, there's another hilarious dumb Neil joke where after the song everybody's happy about it and he tells Knives, you should see him live.
You should see him live. They're way better live.
It was live. So so Jules tells them to come backstage. For some reason, you know, Envy wants you guys to come backstage. And this is where also Knives finds out that Scott used to date Envy. She's like, what?
she gets that weird face when she finds out. That,
yeah. Ooh. Yeah, the little, I don't know what that's supposed to be. Todd fucking punches the highlights out of Knives.
You punched the highlights out of her hair.
Yeah. That's a good Neil. That's a good Neil impression. And we find out he has vegan powers. God.
This is such a funny series of events. Cause yeah, he punches the highlights out of Knives' hair and he's like, you're incorrigible. And he's like, I don't know the meaning of the word.
And then the text pops up. He really doesn't.
He really doesn't.
It's funny as shit. And there's so much. And by the, I feel like we made fun of vegans a lot more in 2010 than we do now.
Oh yeah.
We got to put that in context where the fact that he's vegan, they hated that about Todd. You know what I mean? Like, people, they were so uppity about that.
But it was a funny joke to where, like, because he's vegan, he has these superpowers. Yeah. It's like, basically he's just better than you. Like, yeah, that was the general at the time kind of belief about people who were vegan in 2010.
We find out he punched a hole in the moon for Ramona back when they were dating.
And if you ever see the moon in the movie, if they ever show the moon, it has a hole in it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's referenced in the show too.
One of our listeners, Alexis, messaged me when I posted on Instagram that we were doing this movie this week. And she wrote, as a former vegan, I admit at times I did feel better than everyone. That part always has me cackling in this movie.
It's accurate. How could you not? You know, you're being helpful. I also love that there's a joke about, oh, what did he go to Vegan Academy? And then they just kind of bring it back later, telling the story of when they actually dated. But then I dumped him when he went off to Vegan Academy. It was a really cool thing that was brought back that I've never really thought about before. Then they fight. He keeps losing. There's the whole bit about the cleaning lady because Todd's dumb as shit.
She dusts.
Yeah, but I assume she'll have the weekend off. And then when she gets there Monday, it's like a whole thing. And then they have the bass battle. We talked about that earlier. Scott loses that as well. And finally, he tricks him because he has ESP. He can read Scott's mind. And he thinks about putting the soy milk in the cup he's drinking, puts half and half in Todd's cup, and tricks him into drinking dairy. The vegan police show up and remove his powers.
Oh my God. It's Thomas Jane and Clifton Collins Jr.
It's amazing.
Vegan police, you're in violation of code number 827, imbibement of half and half.
Mm-hmm. But it's his third strike because he also ate chicken parm. Chicken's not vegan. And before that, gelato.
Smoking eggs, bitch.
And then he's able to easily defeat Todd without his powers. He calls.
There is a really funny bit where Steven asks, like, hey, I always wondered, why does being vegan give you psychic powers? And Todd's like, you know, 10%, you only use 10% of your brain. It's because the other 90% is filled with Curtis Way.
Easy. Makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
He calls Envy Natalie. And it was kind of almost lightweight touching moment about her losing her way as Envy Adams. And then Scott's kind of a major dick to Ramona. Like, he's starting to get worried that she's going to dump him and he's getting exhausted from fighting all these exes as well. And then right at the wrongest moment, the fourth ex, the girl from earlier, Roxy, shows up. It's so juvenile, but like, I get it. And I love it when he finds out, it clicks that they've dated and
gets
he
it.
He looks at Ramona and goes, you had a sexy phase? We are simple, dumb, idiot creatures.
I got a kick out of back off, Hasbian. Like,
There's Hasbien. There's
a little Bifurious. Yeah.
But this
is great.
I love the fight because Ramona actually does most of the fighting. She pulls out her fucking hammer. It's iconic.
So cool. This is such a good fight scene.
And too. Roxy's got the whip. It's probably the best choreographed fight, I think.
Oh,
in the
for
movie.
Sure. I agree. Yeah.
And she ends up fighting for Scott by like holding his arms because he didn't want to hit a girl.
It's league rules. He has to defeat her with his own fists.
Your BF is about to get effed in the B.
And then her weakness is in the back of her knees. So Scott kind of pokes from the back of the knee and she bursts into coingasm.
Yeah, she dies from an orgasm. You'll never do this to her. That's her last curse is you'll never make her come. And then he orders two gin and tonics. Both are for him because he's just stressed out. He's a super dick to her.
He says a really mean thing where he's like, is there anyone at this party you haven't slept with?
And he says, she says, you're just another evil ex waiting to happen. Ooh. Gives him the list. And there's only the Ketayanagi twins and Gideon left on the list. And then when he gets to the next Battle of the Bands show,
a fun little costume design again is he in this scene, he's wearing a Fantastic Four logo shirt. Next to the four, there's a little barely visible half next to it. And in the DVD commentary, Edgar was saying they put that shirt in there because at this point in the story, Scott's very close to being an evil ex. So he's like, because Roxy was four, Ketayanagi twins are 5 and 6. So Scott in this moment is evil ex 4.5.
Oh, interesting.
It's just a fun little costume design choice.
Wouldn't he be 8.5 though, really?
Well, yeah, but in the story there.
Or a 7.5?
But contextually in the story.
I get it.
Yeah.
Nice touch.
That poster needs more exclamation marks.
Isn't he wearing the guitar head though?
At the Battle of the Bands, yeah.
Yeah.
But I think somehow in between.
That's like the logo of the movie now.
He's wearing like the Rock Band bassist logo. When you play the game Rock Band, that's the logo for the bass.
And she's there with Gideon. Just can't resist him when I'm around him. But we find out that he literally controls her mind, mm-hmm. right? With his powers. And then he decides the bands are fighting at the same time. So it's I forget what they call it.
Amp versus amp.
Yeah. Amp versus amp. We are Sex Bomb and we're here to make you sad and think about death and stuff.
And there's such a good song.
There's like a sound kaiju fight, that their band eventually wins.
It's like King Ghidorah versus King Kong, basically.
Yeah. And he wins. The Kong wins. And he gets one up. He gets an extra life. Goes after Ramona. Runs into Knives. Just leaves her there. Doesn't even say anything.
I know. It's so sad because they're playing that Anthem for a 17-year-old girl song. And like, that's a sad song in general. So like, just seeing poor Knives. I love Knives Chow.
She's a great character. I looked up what Ellen Wong did after this. Nothing that I've really seen. Which is disappointing.
Because she's so delightful.
Yeah, she's fun. And he tells Ramona, I'm in lesbians with you.
And I really mean it.
And she tells him that they have to break up. But in that moment, G-Man, Gideon, reveals himself, gives him a record deal. Scott's like, no way I can sign that. They just kick him out of the band and replace him with Neil and sign it. And then we get another version of the Ramona song in the background.
I love the call out that like Steven Stills is peeing himself and it's just like pee era.
Yeah. He goes to talk to his sister, and I love the gag where she's like talking about the 11 evil exes, and he's like, it's 7. And she's like, oh, that's not that bad.
And I love that she immediately walks away on the phone. She's like, oh, I know, it's so pathetic.
Yeah. He ends up seeing Wallace and the guy's junk, you know, and then he kicks Scott out forever for sex. But also, this is fucking house, and I've been letting you crash here for a year.
Yeah. Wallace deserves his own space.
And at this moment, Gideon calls.
Hey, buddy.
I love that in the background, you can hear Wallace go, what a perfect asshole. And there's like the gag where he thinks he's talking to his boyfriend and they're having sex. But he's like, oh, no, it's my way, Gideon. Right? It's just a fun thing for me. And then he like races off to fight Gideon. But first, like the really long extended tying of his shoe. And then he shows up to fight Gideon. So you're here to fight me for Ramona? Like, was that not clear? Like, love that gag. Mm-hmm. Scott earned the power of love.
Power of love.
Defeats all the ninjas with his love sword. Fails.
We are a Sex Bomb and we're here to sell out and make money and stuff.
And she like flips Gideon off with her, you know, as she scratches her nose. So he fights Gideon, loses. Knives Chow comes to the rescue seemingly, but she's actually there to kill Ramona. Both the girls confront him. He makes a lame excuse, doesn't admit to cheating on Ramona. I did cheat on you. And then he gets stabbed from behind and dies by Gideon. And then he's like in
the shot of him lying on the ground and it like the background goes black and it's like dead. That's actually an interesting case of where Brian Lee O'Malley actually liked that scene, that shot so much that he lifted that directly from the movie and put it in.
Oh, because the ending book. Wasn't written yet.
Because the final, yeah, it wasn't written yet.
Nice. He's like, that's nice.
He's like, that's pretty dope. I'm Edgar, stealing that.
And then he's in the dying dream death world. And it ends up talking to Ramona like, well, I got time and all that shit. And he has like his nominal character growth, gets his second life redo because he had a one up.
I learned something.
Too bad I'm dead. why do I have Neil Swoons in parentheses on my notes?
I don't know. Does Neil swoon? Oh, no.
Neil doesn't, but they...
Yeah, no. So Scott's coming in. He gets his extra life. He respawns outside the club. He kind of gets in there quicker.
I hate your haircut.
He's like, Steven, the lineup's great. It sounds better without me. Kim, I'm real sorry about me. And
yeah,
Kim smiles. And he goes, young Neil, you will now forever be known as Neil.
And then he swoons. Yeah, that's right. Neil. And then he gets the power of self-respect and he owns up. He defeats the ninjas again quickly and then owns up to his mistakes with both women.
Yes, I hurt you knives.
Quick apology. We'll take it. And then another fight with G-Man, who ends up like kicking Ramona down the stairs.
Bad.
He does defeat Gideon, and then you can defeat me, but can you defeat yourself? And it's the Nega Scott, which was referenced in the ninja game earlier, because he always loses the fight with Nega Ninja. And then he ends up just walking out, shooting the shit with himself. Like, it's actually a nice guy. We're going to have brunch.
Later.
We have a lot in common, it turns out. And then Ramona decides to leave town. And that's kind of sad. And then Knives tells, basically you get this kind of fake, whatever. Like the movie wants you to be like, Knives is fine. She told him to go get Ramona. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So this is the alternate ending that where they wrote that, again, they weren't sure how the book was going to end. So they wrote an ending where Scott ends up with Knives, and they wrote an ending where Scott ends up with Ramona. And obviously they stuck with the one with Ramona, but I think this is the biggest problem with the movie, because the movie kind of leaves all these subtle little examples that would make it pseudo believable that he would go back with Knives. Like, you know, you don't deserve her. I think Ramona tells Scott in the dream, like, maybe I wasn't the one you should have been fighting for. They defeat Gideon by working together with the ninja game that they're playing.
Yeah.
But because they do that, they leave this door open for him to get back together with Knives. I don't think they do enough to make it believable or feel necessarily correct that he's ending up with either of them.
Agreed. And it's all because of his character growth is so minimal. You know what I mean? I actually kind of like the ending where she realizes maybe I didn't need to stop hopping dating people and just kind of figure my own shit out. Mm-hmm. And you need to do that too, kind of thing, you know? But yeah. I also, from a movie perspective, it's like, it's fine and satisfying that they go off together, you know? And again, she's a literal manic pixie dream girl. I think that term was coined from a kind of a misogynistic character perspective back in the movie Elizabethtown. I forget the critic that named it, but it's a whole thing now. You get that with Eternal Sunshine a little bit, but there's a lot of characters.
500 Days of Summer.
Yeah, where it's just like this quirky, cool chick who comes to like emotionally save the man, and that's all that they really are. She's a literal manic pixie dream girl because she's got the pixie cut, and then she can traverse his dreams.
She's manic.
So like, that's kind of hilarious.
Yeah.
But there's so many criticisms that are almost too easy of this movie. It's very 2010. But I adore it.
Yeah.
And we had a great time talking about it. Thank you so much for choosing it. I hope that you enjoyed listening to us discussing it. And I think that's the end here, right? But does anybody have any questions or anything we need to answer?
I have a question.
You do?
Yeah. Do you love me?
I'm in lesbians with you.
Oh, yay. I
definitely very much am.
Word. You brought the big guns.
That's right.
Now, this is an incredible movie. Again, if you guys like this movie, highly recommend reading the books, but also definitely check out Scott Pilgrim Takes Off on Netflix.
Yeah.
Because
I think it solves any issues you might have about the movie, honestly.
Oh, completely. And it's a lot of fun. Like there's so many, like this movie has so many, it's dense with movie, video game and band Easter eggs and jokes that, I mean, there are a bunch of band jokes in here that I probably are going over my head. I'm sure there's a bunch of video game references that are going over people's heads.
Yeah, because Edgar Wright's film and music knowledge are just off the charts.
And so if you like that aspect of it, Scott Pilgrim Takes Off is just as dense. And I think a little bit even more kind of like leans into the video game and anime specifically love that this franchise has.
Yes, absolutely.
So check those out.
Yes. If you want to make us watch movies like they did, you can go to patreon.com/streamingthings.
This was
subscribe.
A little tickler, by the way, that suggests this movie. I don't know if we said that at the top.
I don't think we called out Little Tickler.
Little Tickler what nominated Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
Again, next week, we're taking a break. We're doing the holiday episode instead of a patron pick. But the week after, we're talking about The Other Sister. So get on that train. And yeah, I hope you're having a great holiday season. And if you're not, this too shall pass. We love you very much. Thank you for supporting the show. That's all the time we have for right now. We've got to go return some videotapes. My name is Kit.
And it's your boy, Steve.
And this is Streaming Things. Happy streaming.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.